It's Thursday, September 17th, 2020, and this is the Gab and Joe Show. You know why I referenced that? You know what happened 20 years ago?
No.
Lionel Messi rocked up at Barcelona. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it was such a big day in Barcelona's history that I will reference this time and again today. But anyway, let's move on because we have a big show for you. It's Serie A kicking off this weekend. We've got quick hits coming up. Thiago Alcantara looking to be on the move. But let's start at the top. The Bundesliga. Who better than Derek Ray, the man who will be calling these games for ESPN, joining us on the line.
Is this his debut as well? If it is, he has to do like some sort of song or initiation or something like that.
He will. I'm sure there's some Scottish fight song that he can deliver to us later on. Derek, welcome in. Let's go right at the top. Thiago Alcantara, multiple sources, including, of course, our very own Mark Ogden, reporting that Liverpool have agreed a 30 million euro, 27 million pound fee with Bayern Munich. Personal terms, TBD, but it looks like that's about done. What kind of player are they getting? Should they be concerned about all the games he's missed over the years? Should they be concerned about the fact that he's 29 years old? How does he fit into this Liverpool team?
I think he fits well, you know. I think as I look at Thiago, and yeah, it's interesting because in Germany, not everybody has appreciated him down the years, every step of the way. But when he's on his game, I mean, my goodness, we are talking about a beautiful footballer. And we saw that really under Hansi Flick last season. There were doubts about Thiago going into the campaign when Niko Kovac was still in charge. But, I mean, I think we're talking about somebody who, in technical terms and when it comes to actually delivering on the pitch, really when he does it, is a player who is in the upper echelon of central midfield players in the world. So Liverpool have been monitoring this quite clearly. They obviously didn't fancy the price to begin with, but Bayern, as Bayern do, have driven, I'm not going to say a hard bargain, but probably a fair bargain from their point of view. And as you said, Gab, it looks as though it's happening.
Jules, I'm assuming this means that Wijnaldum's gone now.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
I mean, the report's saying, oh, they don't need to sell anybody, but in the real world, he's got a year left. You're not giving this dude a new contract.
Yeah.
What does it mean for Bayern, though, Derek? Because I look at this, and please tell me if I'm being a little bit Chicken Little about this, but They're going into the season with three wingers, and one of them is Leroy Sané, a phenomenal player, but a guy who spent the best part of the last couple seasons injured. In central midfield, with Thiago gone, you're looking at Tolisso, Joshua Kimmich, Leon Goretzka, and Jules's buddy, Mikko Cousins, who nobody seems to like.
I do.
Thomas Müller, Xerxe is the backup to Lewandowski up front. Or you can move Müller there, but then you need to put somebody else in midfield. At right back, it's still Benjamin Pavard, who's a center back impersonating a right back, unless you put Kimmich there, but then you're down in midfield. Are they a little short? Do they need to bring in new players to be sure of their umpteenth Bundesliga title?
You could argue that. You could argue if there is
a flaw. I am arguing that. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I don't know if you're necessarily wrong because, and I'll tell you why. I think if you look at last season, we said this as well. I remember having a look at Bayern going into the campaign and even during the season and thinking, yeah, you know, if Lewandowski goes down, then you're down to Xerxe. And okay, he can do it as a substitute. He can do it on a one-off occasion, but maybe not over the course of several matches. I always think, Gab and Julien, that Bayern find a way around these things. And, you know, last season, they say necessity is the mother of invention. They made David Alaba, into a centre-back. And nobody was really predicting that at the start of the season.
Yeah, that's because Zule and Lucas Hernandez got hurt.
Yes,
that wouldn't have happened if they don't get hurt.
Right. So they come up with a solution. Who's to say they couldn't come up with another solution like that? I mean, Alaba, for example, you know, we know he plays in midfield, has played in midfield for his country. Now, I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but I'm saying that I think Bayern have solutions within their squad to be able to do that. You mentioned Tolisso. He's somebody who's been frustrated because he hasn't played as much as probably he envisaged when he signed. Cuisance, I, like Julien, think he is a very good talent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know,
well,
so far hasn't been there in terms of the mental side of it, but I think he has potential.
All right. You mentioned Alaba there, of course. There's another one. We're not sure if he's still going to be there next season, but TBD. Jules?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Dortmund a bit with you, Derek, because I'm a big Lucien Favre fan, and like Gab, and I think they can push Bayern quite a long way, especially if Jadon Sancho stays. If he doesn't stay, it's a different story, but if he stays, I just like the look of them. I don't know where you stand in the Lucien Favre barometer of love or not so much love, like me and Gab, but I do think that after being so close 2 years ago, not so close last year, but maybe something can happen this year, or am I just in dreamland?
No, I think you and I are on the same wavelength with regard to Dortmund and Favre. I know that there was this big debate at the end of last season. Should they retain somebody who, in the minds of many, had failed because, you know, he didn't catch Bayern, didn't really get close to Bayern in the end. But I think you can see what Favre has done. And if you talk to people at Dortmund, they all rave about him. The people who are close to the team, they say what he does, how he works with his players is to be commended. And I think he deserves one more chance. And so I'm glad he's got that chance. Now, the doubts I have about Dortmund are the same doubts that I had a year ago. They're all defensive doubts. I think middle to front, they're excellent. They will score goals. They will provide the ammunition for Erling Haaland. I don't think that is a question mark at all. I still am not sure that they have done enough defensively. You know, Thomas Meunier, yes, you know, he's good and he will help. But do you look at Dortmund and say that is a watertight team that will keep the door closed enough for them to threaten?
Just for the avoidance of doubt here, I like Lucien Favre as a person. I think he's done some good work.
I'm not sure you do.
You also get so many bites of the cherry. And after all the investment last year, I expected more from them. But my concern this year, though, is we've all marveled at the tremendous amount of young attacking talent that they've assembled. Do I need to name them all for those who are ignorant and been living under a rock? I'll do it very, very quickly. Yeah,
do it quickly.
Jadon Sancho, Julian Brandt, Hazard, Gio Reyna. They've added Jude Bellingham. They still have Marco Royce. That's a ton of people. And on top of that, of course, that they've got people coming through. They have Erling Haaland up front. They've got this kid, Moukoko, who apparently is just turning 16 or is still 15 or whatever, who Erling Haaland has said, was training with the first team. Erling Haaland says, oh, this guy is better than I was at his age. My concern is when you have that much attacking talent, you want to get them on the pitch, Derek, and yet, you know, you can only play three attacking midfielders and a striker. How do you navigate that? How do you kind of dole out the playing time in a sense so that everybody develops, everybody stays healthy and happy, and you also get results on the pitch while still maintaining chemistry? I mean, I think that was a challenge in that last season. And this year, assuming Sancho stays, it's going to be even more of a challenge, no?
Yeah, it's a very difficult balance to strike, especially for a team like Dortmund, where, I mean, they are set up to attack. And so everybody wants to get his chance. And there's going to be somebody disappointed at various times. And I think what we've seen, Gab, is that for Dortmund to be successful, you make a good point, they need this platform and they need a couple of players who are willing to take themselves out of the attacking side of it. Now, I do think Axel Witsel, though he had a little bit of a dip in form around the midway point of the campaign, is somebody they can by and large rely on. Thomas Delaney had his ups and downs, his injuries, but I think, you know, to make the broad point about it, Favre, to be successful, does need to have players who are willing to sacrifice. But that, of course, also means that somebody amongst those attackers, those attacking players who you mentioned, is not going to be getting a game.
You know what I'm worried about for the Bundesliga, Derek, and we're showing it on ESPN, and I really hope it's a great season, and I hope it's open, and we have a title race, a bit like we had last year when Leipzig were first and Gladbach were first and all of that. But you've lost, as a league, I mean, you've lost Kai Havertz, you've lost Werner, you're going to lose Thiago, you might lose Jadon Sancho, you've lost people like Kevin Folland, for example. Okay, he's not Messi, but he's been a really good player in the Bundesliga for many years now at Leverkusen. And I just think that the league, if you compare of all the players who've left compared to the players who've come, is a weakened league compared to last year. And I just wonder what kind of season are we going to see?
It's a valid point. I don't think it's lost on anybody connected with the Bundesliga that these top players have gone. But I think the Bundesliga has been careful in terms of how they have managed to recruit in recent years. I'm talking really about all Bundesliga clubs. Now, you know, talking to a Frenchman like yourself, I think the French market has become particularly interesting for Bundesliga clubs.
That's right, yeah.
And I think they've done a fabulous job with that. I mean, I look at somebody like Moussa Diaby at Bayer Leverkusen, who I love watching him, and I think there is real potential for him to get better under your favourite Peter Bosz. You know, we'll see how that works out in the course of the season. But I mean, there are so many other examples of French players who have come through and are getting their chance, getting their platform. So this is where I think the Bundesliga has to be creative. They know that, you know, the way the world is now, and you know, in Corona times, maybe even more so, they are going to lose players, probably to the Premier League more than they have. So it's up to the clubs to be resourceful, and I think most of them are capable of being that.
You mentioned Bayer Leverkusen there. You mentioned Moussa Diaby. I like Moussa Diaby too. Obviously, yep. they've added Patrick Schick up front.
Yeah.
But most of all, they have this kid that everybody is super excited about, Florian Wirtz. Can you just describe him a little bit? He made his debut last year before when he was still 16 years old, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. He scored even.
It's true. Yeah. Inevitably, people are going to compare him to Kai Havertz. Is he that sort of player or is he a bit different?
There are similarities with Havertz for sure. And, you know, it was quite a coup to get him. He had been with Köln just down the road. But, you know, players from that area are often attracted by Leverkusen. They're not a bigger club in terms of support, but they have the resources. They have the better financial backing.
And Peter Bosz's charisma, don't forget.
Well, of course, yeah. Of course. I know that you're always beguiled by the charisma of Peter Bosz. And obviously Florian Wirtz was as well. But I think that what's good about him is he can play again across the front. He's flexible tactically in that sense. And it's probably too early to say, you can look at traits that are absolutely reminiscent of Kai Havertz when he was coming through at the age of 17. But I think the future is very bright. And I think that Boss will not hesitate to use Wirtz for Leverkusen a lot this season. A team in a transitional phase, having lost Havertz, having lost Kevin Volland, but having gained Patrick Schick, and I think that will be quite a significant game.
You know, we talked about Favre and the pressure, and I think Hansi Flick will be under pressure as well. You know, he's not even having a full first season and won the treble and etc. And Peter Bosz, for all we know, could be out of the door in 3 months, and you know, you probably hope so. But I think Nagelsmann and the pressure is on that, because Leipzig have to improve now. You know, it's a season where semi-finalist of the Champions League, finishing third in the Bundesliga after having been in touch with the top for most of the season.
And Timo Werner is gone.
But they've replaced him in a way, I guess, with Wong from Salzburg. But they will maybe invest a bit more between now and October. But you want to see Nagelsmann trying to take his own game and his team's game to another level as well.
Yeah, help us out with that on Leipzig, because I mean they were linked with a whole bunch of players. They end up with Hwang. I mean, I've only seen this dude on TV against Liverpool and when he was at Salzburg. Yeah. But is that enough? I mean, can you squeeze stuff out of Poulsen and Kunku, some combination out there? Is Ademola Lookman going to come good? I don't know.
Someone is going to come in.
Or are they
right
still going to sign somebody?
Surely.
You would think so. And there has been talk about Leipzig getting away from their model. It's not a traditional model because they're not a traditional club, but the model that they have established, which is signing younger players, polishing them, eventually selling them on. Maybe now they're having to look out of necessity at older players. But I think I'd be a little bit worried about Leipzig, not because I think they're going to crash or anything like that, but how do you keep developing with this model and with the other teams in the league and with the personnel they now have and the personnel they no longer have with Timo Werner not there, and Schick, who I think in his own way was an important contributor last season as a front man within that system, not necessarily a prolific goal scorer, but somebody who did a lot of the other things. So you're now basically saying to someone like Yusuf Poulsen, one of the sort of the pioneers, if you like, for Leipzig when they were coming up the divisions, you have to be the guy again. We'll see. I mean, we'll see who they sign. I would assume that we're looking at more signings for Leipzig. Nagelsmann, of course, wants them to develop, has wanted them to be a more multifaceted team because they are, in their core, they're still a pressing and counter-attacking side. He's tried to change them to make them more possession-orientated. I just think that there is competition there. I don't know if we're going to get to Borussia Mönchengladbach. I assume that we will.
Yes, I was going to ask you about Gladbach next. And my man Marco Rose.
Yeah, I think that is going to be a really interesting battle, if you like, Leipzig and Gladbach, just in terms of where they are with regard to their respective developments.
All right, I feel like we've hit most of the bigger clubs. I want to leave you on this, because when Bob Bradley was appointed at Swansea and became the first U.S. coach, the first American coach to manage in the Big Five, felt like it was a huge deal to be coming out of the woodwork, talking to him, blah, blah, blah. And I know Bob is a big talker and he had the track record before that. But the second American coach, legitimately American coach, to coach in a top five league, is going to be making his debut this weekend. And it's Rino Matarazzo, a newly promoted Stuttgart. Why is there no big buzz around him in the U.S.? It almost seems like nobody knows who he is. And shouldn't this guy be getting a little more attention?
100%. I don't really understand that one either. It's not as though he's somebody who has no connection with the country of the U.S. I mean, we have U.S. citizens who have never lived in
exactly.
the U.S.
He's not a pretend like Fabian Johnson dude. He's like,
don't be too harsh on Fabian.
He's from New Jersey. He's from North Jersey. Yeah. He grew up where they all grew up, Claudio Reyna and Berhalter and whatever, all the way back to John Harkes. I think he went to college there, and he just moved there in his mid-20s, right? Isn't that his story?
That's right. I've got great respect for him because he moved. It wasn't a glamorous move. He basically moved to play lower level football in Germany and made a life for himself there and has made a coaching life for himself. And he's learned from some of the best. And of course, he's working under Thomas Hitzlsperger there at Stuttgart. And I think the interesting thing, Gavin and Jules, is that last season, when things were not looking great for Stuttgart, they were having their ups and downs. We were wondering if they were going to get promoted. Instead of doing what some decision makers do and reflexively firing Matarazzo, he did the opposite. He extended his contract. He said, you know what? We have faith in this guy. We brought him in for a reason. They only brought him in at the midway point of the season. And we're going to reward him with an extended contract. And he did the job. He got them promoted. Now, I do think that there will be a lot of eyes on Matarazzo and Stuttgart in the early part of the season. If it goes the wrong way, if they get off to a terrible start, then he's probably one of the ones that we'll unfortunately be talking about as somebody who could be replaced. But there's no reason to believe that'll be the case. He's a bright guy. He's got great ideas. And I think we all wish him well.
I also love the fact about this is that, as we said, this is a guy who wanted to make it happen. He made his career happen. He played his, he paid his dues. He put his rear end on the line and he worked his way up from the bottom. Derek, thanks so much. Look out. The Bundesliga is on ESPN Plus if you're in the US. And we'll be chatting to you throughout the season, no doubt.
What about Derek's initiation song?
Oh, yes, Derek, we forgot.
Come on. It's your debut. You have to if you want to come back.
Yes, you need to sing your club song.
Yeah, or Britney Spears.
Or the club you supported as a little boy.
Or Britney Spears, your favorite singer.
Okay, right. I can do that easily. So obviously I'm from Aberdeen, northeast of Scotland, and we have a song that everybody in Aberdeen knows. So I'll see if I can find the right pitch here. And you can judge. You can give me marks out of 10, and I'm sure they will not be flattering. But here we go. The northern lights of old Aberdeen mean home sweet home to me. The northern lights of Aberdeen are what I long to see. I've been a wanderer all of my life, and many's the sight I've seen. Godspeed the day when I'm on my way to my home in Aberdeen.
Brilliant.
Amazing.
Listen, for those who think that football began in the Premier League era, young uns, let me remind you that the mighty Aberdeen, managed by somebody named Sir Alex Ferguson, I don't know what he went on to do.
He wasn't Sir then. But.
Yes, but he was just Alec at the time. Yeah, they won European silverware. They gave Scotland their greatest ever defender and greatest ever Aberdeen player. Do you know who I'm talking about? No, of course not, because you were born in 1990. That would be one Willie Miller. Am I correct, Derek?
There's only one Willie Miller.
And if Willie Miller had started in place of Alan Hansen at the World Cup, Scotland would have definitely won the World Cup way back then in, was it 1982,
I believe.
It's so true. So, anyway. And, of course, Joey Harper, the most underrated striker in the history of Aberdeen.
Gordon Strachan, right?
Gordon Strachan, also useful player, that's right.
Gordon Strachan. And Joey Harper, I'm actually doing a podcast interview with him this week for the club. So
tell Joey Harper that he is a legend.
Yes,
thanks so much. We gave you the Bundesliga and we gave you the mighty Dons as well. Cheers, Derek. Thank you.
Thank you, Derek.
Thanks, Gab. Thanks, Jules.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, that was more than enough Bundesliga. How about some Serie A?
Are you excited?
Are you excited?
No, but I mean, more than a normal Serie A season starting.
I always get excited. I love football. You know me. I watch almost any kind of football. However, this is exciting because there's so many question marks around Juventus. I think, you know, the general sense, and many people feel this, is that Juve kind of won the title last year by default. They changed. They moved away from Maurizio Sarri. They still don't have a center forward as we speak. You're looking Dzeko, maybe Suarez. Who'd you go for?
Neither of them. I don't like the 34, 33-year-old that you get for short-term fix.
But the idea is,
when you already have a 35, soon 36, to be as good as he is, Cristiano Ronaldo in your team.
Well, leaving aside the fact that these guys are basically kids relative to Zlatan. But that is kind of Juve's feeling, is that they have to win now. While Cristiano's still there. So if you get a striker on a free transfer, they're paying for decisions they made earlier.
True, but the big objective for Juve is the Champions League, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you win another Serie A title or not, you've already won nine in a row. Can you win the Champions League with Dzeko up front or with Suarez up front? Shouldn't you think a bit more?
I think so. I mean, if you're talking about this season, I think this season, Dzeko and Suarez up. You're talking about a guy who can play X amount of games, you know, in knockout rounds, right? Presumably you can get to the to the quarterfinals or whatever on your own, and this is where you need him. But you know my feelings on 30-something strikers, right? I've gotten stick from people for being critical of Arsenal and Willian, and but once you go down that road and you're stuck in a corner, which is the corner that Arsenal risk being stuck in, this is what you're going to do. Inter, I think the conventional wisdom is that they're best placed to do it.
Surely. It's all about if they can cope with the pressure, if Conte can cope with the pressure. So the first game that doesn't really go the way he wants to, they maybe drop points. If he goes crazy again and they sort of lose their nerves, they lose their mind, they lose their nerves a bit like they did that time last season, that could cost them. Otherwise, they should be favourite.
It's still very short-termist, I think, from Inter. But again, that's what we're seeing. Now, obviously, they're really pushing for Vidal. Diego Godin is sticking around. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, Alexis Sanchez, of course, confirmed.
I've got one for you. Could this be Atalanta's year? Because Conte can lose his shizzle and this could go bad. Because Juve and PLO, you don't know, they might need a bit of time to adapt and get into the groove of things, okay? Maybe Milan and Ibra doesn't score, they don't have another goal scorer, I don't know, anything. But could this be Atalanta year?
You never want to write them off after what we've seen. However, I would assume people to some degree are going to adapt and figure out how to do it. Also, there's still a chance that Papu Gomez could be on his way. You know, again, Malinovsky is great, but you really need to step up if you're going to replace Papu. And of course, the Papu dance. Also questions about Ilicic, who was injured for all that time. So I don't know about that. I mean, I think if it's somebody else, I kind of like what... Obviously, Lazio came very close last season.
Yeah.
They've hung on to virtually all their talented players, which is a big plus. However, I think they kind of overachieved. I can't see Mobile pulling that crap off again this year. We were on the excellent ESPN show, Mute Me, and Stuart Robson said, or was it you? No, it was Stuart. It was Captain Obvious, Stuart Robson, saying that Serie A was going to be
competitive.
Super competitive this year. And I was thinking about it, and there's so many question marks with Juve, with Pirlo, with what he can do.
I know you're on board, and I know you liked, or at least you understood the logic behind...
But it could implode badly.
I think it could be an absolute disaster. You know, it could be it could be Thierry Henry Monaco style disaster. You know, for all we know, I really hope not, because I want Pirlo to do well. I think everyone likes Pirlo. Everyone wants to see him doing well. Everybody believes they could do well, that he had all the attributes to become a great manager, the way he was as a player, his intelligence, etc., etc., etc. But he could really go badly.
We're going to get into this a little more, because in the quick hits we're going to be talking about his master's thesis. And yeah. I think this is kind of a unique situation, obviously, because he, you know, you have a guy in a new job who's never managed before, who gives you a master's thesis which says, like, this is how I want to play football, and then goes into extreme detail. It makes for really, really interesting.
I know, but Thiago Motta got a better marks than him, and he was a disaster at Genoa. So it's not because you'll do really
good in your
thesis.
That's not what I'm suggesting. But what I find interesting is... first of all, Thiago Motta is not Andrea Pirlo, but anyway.
No, but still, he got better marks.
What I think is really interesting here is the type of football that he wants to play is very obvious. It's like a blend of Guardiola and Klopp. You know, big surprise there. There's a lot of counter-pressing. When you lose the ball, you cover the ball quickly, keep the ball on the ground, go vertical, attack the space, all this stuff, right? And it is very, very tactical. It's quite complicated positional shifts, movements. And you know I made the parallel with Zidane, which really angered you.
Yeah,
but that's how Juventus see it. You know, the great man manager, you'll listen to the quiet old guy who was a superstar in a way that you're not going to listen to Sarri or Rafa Benitez or whatever. But it's funny because Zidane came in and he didn't particularly do anything sophisticated. I'm talking about when he first came in.
He said, like, I think he will agree with that. Yeah.
What worked under Carlo? All right, not much. All I can do is really screw things up. So I'll just keep the same thing and keep the place happy.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But this job is far harder for Pirlo than the Real job was for Zidane, really.
Oh, definitely. I mean,
there's so much to build for Pirlo now when, like you said, Zidane already arrived and the house was pretty much built. He had to do the little bit of painting there and there, and that was it.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I mean, it seems crazy when you've won the league so many times in a row to say something like that, but you're absolutely, absolutely spot on. But what I wonder is, he's being asked, or he's presenting himself as a guy who has all these tactical ideas, but at the same time, I think he was hired because the club see him as a Zidane-type galactical whispering, you know, man manager.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the really interesting dichotomy there.
What I really like, and I think he, because he's so intelligent, he's not surprised, but that he went and get quite an experienced staff with him. He could have gone and just hired the guy who he passed his coaching badges with, for example, or people he played with, but didn't have much of an experience, but he knew that how he would gel with his staff would be very important. But he went to get some people who, you know, have been there before.
And he got somebody innovative.
And people with ideas.
I'll name check him, but he got a guy named Antonio Gagliardi, who nobody's really heard of, but he was the head of analysis with the Italian FA.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Italy, a lot of old school coaches, they're not really into analysis, tactical analysis, analytics. They might do some video analysis and whatever. That's pretty innovative what he brings because, you know, a lot of, I think, Pirlo's tactical vision has partly been shaped by his interactions with this guy. If you read his thesis, he mentions all this data stuff that he picked up. So that's going to be really interesting how that works. So, I mean, look, we spent a lot of time on Juve. I just want to give one last shout out to Roma because we know obviously Zaniolo's loss is huge, and if Dzeko goes, that's going to be big too. But they're hoping to replace Dzeko with Milik if he goes. Can this be a seamless transition?
Or it should be. I mean, I don't think Milik is as gifted technically than Dzeko was. I don't think Milik can score the left foot volley that Dzeko scored for Roma at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. Impossible. But in the approach of the game and his profile, roughly, it's a similar one. It could do.
And you've got the Fonseca magic in year two. I don't know. I have Roma finishing in the top four, all told.
The Juve-Sampdoria game on Saturday night, I believe, or Sunday.
Sunday night.
This is going to, like, the whole of the country is going to watch. The whole of Europe is going to watch Pirlo.
Everybody's got to see what Pirlo's going to do, right?
Yeah. If he feels tense, you know, you could see on his face how he will be, how he will write. Will he sit down? Will he stand up? Will he shout a lot? Will he stay quiet? Will he lose his, you know, I don't know. It'd be fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. So fascinating.
Fascinating. The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Right, enough of all that. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gav.
Tottenham faced Lokomotiv Plovdiv in the Europa League Thursday night, but we're not going to talk about that because it's marginal. The big news is that multiple reports suggest that they're about to bring back Gareth Bale on loan. Real Madrid reportedly paying half of his wages, TBD. Jules, does this excite you? And does it excite you to the point that you're willing to sacrifice Dele Alli, who's been left out of the Spurs squad for the Europa League?
Yeah, we keep Dele Alli for a bit later. But Bale, I love the stories. I don't think it's a very good idea. And sometimes those stories of the prodigal son coming back to the club 7 years after leaving for record fee at the time, etc. Sometimes it doesn't work. He might get injured.
The reports say that is Daniel Levy's just driving this more than. Does this mean Daniel Levy has a heart and emotions?
Maybe, I mean, he was apparently negotiating for Sergio Reguilón, and then he thought, hang on a minute, what about maybe? I mean, I think it would be a great coup for them. I think the fans would be excited, the fans would be happy. Gareth, I think, certainly would be happy, and you would believe he's hungry to come back and play for Spurs again and all of that. So I think it makes sense in a way, although I still think before bringing someone like him, they should have thought more about strengthening in other positions. You know, I still think they need a centre-forward with a different profile. Yeah, okay, Bale can play centrally, but it's not the same. I still think at the back, they're not good enough. I love Reguilón, and we'll come to that later. But
All right, wait now. There is function. I'll tell you what, if you got to sacrifice Bale, if you have to sacrifice Alli, who's one of your central midfielders, and you don't have that many, to make Bale work, even short-term, I'm not so on board with this.
But Alli is not going to go anywhere, right?
There's reports. I don't know. Time will tell. Hopefully not.
But Spurs aren't done either, Gab, because they're on the verge of tying up a deal for Sergio Reguilón, the Real Madrid left back, for around £27 million, €30 million. This is a great coup. I think it's a bargain and a really, really, really good
signing. I think he's a tremendous signing. This whole thing about, you know, he's linked to United, but then reports were saying that United didn't want him because Real Madrid insisted on a buyback clause over 2 years. You know what? Buyback clause. The guy is a Real Madrid guy. He's going to want to go. Whether there's a buyback clause or not, right? You could negotiate different bonuses, whatever. He comes here for 2 years. He does really, really well. Real Madrid already have a guy in his position named Ferland Mendy. In fact, they've got two. They've got Marcelo as well. So there's no hurry to get back. Bring him in. Not a lot of money. Very gifted player. Interesting implication of Ben Davies. Also gives you the option perhaps of playing with a back three sometimes.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
With Davies in there. So I'm totally on board with this.
Me too. I think it's great signing.
Paris Saint-Germain needed an injury time winner from Julian Draxler to land their first victory of the season, 1-0 over Mets. And obviously, because this is PSG, they had a player sent off. This time it was Abdou Diallo. But Jules, this is all overshadowed by the wild finish in the PSG-Marseille game Sunday night and the five red cards in a minute. Walk us through the fallout.
Yeah, we had the sanctions from the discipline committee on Wednesday night, almost at the same time as the game finished, or during the game, during the PSG-Mets game. So it's a six-match ban for Kurzawa, who's the one who
started everything, yes.
Or at least threw the most punches and kicks on Amavi. Amavi got 3 games for retaliating. Neymar, the big question was, we were wondering how much he would get for his little slap on the back of Alvaro's head. He got 2 games. So did Paredes, who started the whole brawl by being, you know, crazy for the 15 minutes he stayed on the pitch. And then Benedetto got just 1 game. The big thing, though, is the racial abuse claims by Neymar towards Alvaro. That's is under investigation, so we will know that a bit later. And for the Di Maria spitting on Alvaro, they've called him in for next week. I think he could be in big, big trouble, Di Maria.
Do they have video evidence?
Yeah, you could see it on the footage. I mean, I saw it during the game, to be fair.
Right.
But now they're looking at it. It could be bad for him.
All right.
Bad. Noël Le Graët, the president of the French Football Federation, came in with interesting comments on racism in football. He said, when a black guy scores a goal, the whole stadium is standing. Not really sure where's going there. So quite frankly, the phenomenon of racism in sport and in football in particular does not exist, or it's little. Is this guy for real?
I have no idea where this dude comes from. I mean, to go from one incident to going and making big pronouncements, they also cited something where they said, oh, there's only 1% of the incidents, I don't even know how they define incidents in French football, are of a racist nature. If you want to say this doesn't happen every week, fine. But also, that's pretty tone deaf to say when you have an incident. Just say, there's no place for this. We're investigating it. We take this seriously. Move on. You don't have to say the sky is falling and everybody's a racist. But equally, don't minimize it like this. And also, like, are we still back in, like, the 1930s where we think that you can't be racist if you applaud somebody who scores a goal for your team, a person of color?
I know, exactly. And the guy is the top of French football. He's been there. He's seen Balotelli. He's seen stuff in Corsica. He's seen all those issues we've had with racism lately in the last 5 years. And he still comes with that kind of rubbish. It's a disgrace.
Going back to last March, you told me Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang would sign a new deal with Arsenal. And now he has!
Yay!
Now, he's locked up until 2023. But Jules, is he really the highest paid player at the club? Earning more than Mesut Ozil,
as
some have reported?
He isn't, but he got a really good deal.
But not more than Ozil?
No, more than Ozil. No. Right. I don't know where that's coming from. But you know what? He believes he deserves it. He wanted to stay to become a legend at the club, leave a legacy, build a legacy, all of that. He feels right at the club. Arteta really wanted him to stay. So did the dressing room. So did the fans. I think it made sense. It really made sense for Arsenal.
You know my feelings on this. If you want to keep Alba, that's fine. I think it means you got to ditch Lacazette and you shouldn't have signed Willian. But hey, I'm in the minority here, evidently.
Let's see how it goes. Manchester City are reportedly contemplating Atletico Madrid Jose Jimenez or Sevilla's Diego Carlos to sign as an alternative to Kalidou Koulibaly, which it seems that this deal is still very difficult to make, and especially if Napoli keep on the price that they want, 80 million euros. Who would be a better fit, Jimenez or Diego Carlos? Or Koulibaly?
I like Jimenez better. Also, he's not left-footed, so, like, you know, they have now all of a sudden a whole gaggle of left-footed centre-backs. But honestly, Jimenez, they're talking buyout clause, 120 million. You'd want to work that down a lot. He is 4 years younger than Koulibaly, but I don't know. I still think this gets done, and I think Koulibaly comes. Yeah, that's my gut feeling, but
I don't know. No one can play like Koulibaly in those three that we mentioned, even not Diego Carlos.
It's the 20th anniversary of the day when Lionel Messi arrived in Barcelona. Today, we're celebrating it.
Yeah, happy birthday.
And yesterday, he celebrated early with a goal and a win over Girona.
Great pass for Trincao on the Coutinho goal.
Okay, but Jules, it's never easy at this club. What's the deal with Koeman not being legally allowed to manage?
Well, it seems that Koeman cannot manage the club, cannot be on the bench, because they are yet to agree a severance package for Kike Setién being sacked at the end of last season, that is. I know he finished late, but it's still last season. They haven't sorted out one, man. This club is a mess.
The hierarchy
at that club, the board, the president, Bartomeu.
Barto, what are you doing?
It's just time for you to just retire from life. Just retire from life, all in all. Gab Andrea Pirlo's master's thesis was published this week, and it basically tells you exactly that everything that he's going to do as a manager. I assume you've read it.
I have read it. I read it this morning. It goes into extreme detail, all the defensive movements. If you're tactics nerds, it's great for you to read. Let's see if he puts it on the pitch. I don't think it's going to be quite as easy as we expect, but it's very Guardiola, Klopp, early Van Gaal-esque, put it that way.
That's great. I think everybody's excited to see what he can do now, although it's a big gamble. I maintain that.
After Uli Hoeneß's words at the weekend, Bayern continue blowing kisses at Pini Zahavi, David Alaba's agent. Hassan Salihamidžić, who of course is their sporting director, sort of, because Ollie Kahn's in there too, he said that Zahavi, quote, thinks in other dimensions and that his wage demands are crazy and that maybe other clubs are crazy like that, but we're not. Jules, how will this end up?
I think this will end up by Alaba not renewing his deal, not signing, staying this season at Bayern and then leaving on a free next summer, where he will go for the money that he wants to get, that he feels he deserves to get, that Bayern don't want to give him. I don't know why you don't want to make him one of your highest earners when he's been so good for you for so many years, when you've underpaid him for so many years as well. Surely he deserves that. And then another club.
You think
would be
that's
very
more realistic than somebody coming in with an offer for David Alaba now?
They can't sell. You can't replace him. The guy can play in every position pretty much on the pitch. It would be, you know, losing Thiago.
And I guess they got the money, they got the Thiago money, so there wouldn't be that much, or we assume they're getting the Thiago money.
Yeah,
there wouldn't be that much pressure there.
But you can't lose both Thiago and Alaba in the same summer. For them, it would be crazy. So bite the bullet and then let him go for free, because I don't think he will, unless you give him the money, I don't think he will sign. And maybe they will. Maybe eventually they'll say, okay, Pini has won, let's pay.
Play a long game.
Yeah. According to multiple reports, Iowa billionaire Karl Kroos is about to acquire Parma. That would mean that after Roma, Fiorentina, Bologna, Milan, and probably others that you don't want to write, a quarter of Serie A is now owned by North Americans, whether from Canada or from the US. How do you feel about that?
I think it's good. I mean, I think, and by the way, on Kyle Kraus, I'm going to deliver worldwide exclusive. I spoke to him.
Did you? And, is he a friend?
No, but you might be something. There might be something coming up on the website soon. But anyway, look, I think this is really important for Serie A. I think the league has been horrendously mismanaged, which is why other leagues, and I'm talking sort of not just about results on the pitch, but commercially in terms of image, other leagues have caught up and passed it. And I think what we need is more professionalism. And I think we need more owners who understand that the game is also a business and that you take a medium-term and long-term view. I'm hoping...
Yeah, but you know as well that Karl Kroos knows nothing about Italy, nothing about how Italy works, nothing about how difficult it is to do anything in Italy in terms of administration.
I think that's true to a point. It's also... Despite the fact that Kyle Kraus, and if he's listening, forgive me for saying this, looks extremely Midwestern and Germanic, his mom is actually Sicilian. And his family
Jim Palota also came from Italian families, and he struggled.
Yeah, but that's not why he struggled. I mean, I think...
No, but do you see what I mean?
Like, I think Parma's a different... I'm not saying this guy didn't necessarily be a success, but I think you need more people like that, as opposed to people who... Every time there's a league meeting, they fight, they argue over scraps and try to undermine each other. I think when we get to a critical mass of good owners in Serie A, or at least owners who have a business sense in Serie A, and, you know, we've got these five, while there's always discussion about them, you would probably add Juventus to the list, you would certainly add the Atalanta owners to the list, you would probably add the Inter owner to the list. You know, you're getting to that critical mass... Where people like Claudio Lotito, and I can mention him because I know he's not listening, are going to matter less and less. And you won't have this small clubs stopping big clubs perspective. Other interesting thing is touched on before. They're selling 10% of the commercial rights to a private equity fund. I think that's going to help because they're going to have negative control and they're going to hopefully help the league move forward, which is something that I think it very much needs. Jack Grealish has signed a 5-year deal with Aston Villa after saying it was 50-50 whether he would stay. I guess this means he's not going to United this summer. Wise move on his part to stick around?
So I think part of me, maybe the cynical part, think that he also renewed because no one came for him.
And certainly not United.
It's certainly not United.
Not at the fees that...
But on the other hand, it's good because he will go one day, because I think he's too good for Aston Villa. He will go to a bigger club, and then
Villa's spending a lot of money this summer.
True, but they will never go in the Champions League. Well, I hope for them they do. And
they've won the European Cup. I mean, why not?
Yeah, no. But one of my best friends
is Dean
Rochi.
Smith.
No, he's Rochi, and he loves Aston Villa. And I really hope for him that they can finish in the top four. But you know they won't. And I think when Grealish wants to play Champions League football, which is fair. He's an English international now, so I think he will leave one day. But at least. He got the club covered. They will get some money for him. He's not the kind of guy who leave like with 1 year left or on a free or something like that. So
I like the fact that he's sticking around. Villa historically, despite their difficulties, are, you know, if you don't want to, obviously there's a big gap between Big Six and everybody else, but historically they're in that plane with Everton,
and it's his
with
club,
Leeds United.
You know, it's his family's club.
Yeah, exactly. I love the fact that you got a homegrown kid who's made his debut. I love the fact that he's a big personality, and in the end he's sticking around, at least for a while. He doesn't need to become Matt Letizia his whole career.
No. I don't think he will. But,
you know, at least give Villa a chance to grow.
Definitely. Going back to Italy, Roma are on the verge of signing defensive wonderkid Marash Kumbula from Hellas Verona. By the way, I'm surprised he's going to Roma and not a bigger club went for him, but that's another matter.
Bigger than Roma? Bigger than the club from the Eternal City?
Yeah.
As Jim Pallotta would say, it's effing Rome?
Yeah, well, the club in the Champions... not in the Champions League.
Benfica aren't in the Champions League either, as you know. So.
Given they already have Pablo Ibanez and Gianluca Mancini as centre-backs... Does this mean that the door is definitely closed on the mighty Chris Smalling coming back?
This is really interesting, and United fans, pay attention here, because negotiations reportedly broke down and whatever else. Smalling had a tremendous season, obviously, last year, came back a different player. I can only assume United say this, look, you had a great season in Italy, you grew as a player. When it comes to central defenders, we have Lindelof, we have...
Finn Jones.
We have the guy who gets arrested in Greece. We have, you know, like, let me, I know things didn't work out with in the past, and this is why we sent you on loan, but let's at least have a look, right?
Yeah.
So I think United are being smart in this, seeing, having Solskjaer evaluate him, seeing if he can play a part this season. My guess is if Smalling feels as if, you know, he's not going to either be a starter or the first substitute, he might go to the club and say, hey, can we work something out? I'll take a pay cut, whatever. Let's make the deal happen, either to go back to Roma or to go somewhere else. Because based on how he played last season, if it's not at United, this guy deserves to play somewhere.
Yeah, and Roma would have him back, right? Even with Ibanez and Kumbula.
I think so. You have four defenders. Mancini. So what? Kumbula's, Ibanez and Kumbula are still, like, 20 and 21. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, really, absolutely. Houssem Aouar and Memphis Depay have been linked with moves all season long, mostly to Arsenal and Barcelona, respectively. But Leon spoke up about them recently and said what?
Yeah, well, they said that they've had nothing, no bids, nothing from either Arsenal
or interest,
Barcelona.
Nobody wants them?
No, the interest is there, we know that. And I believe Arsenal are preparing a bid for Aouar once they sell Lucas Torreira, probably to Torino, after Emi Martinez went to Villa. But so I think the two different cases. I think Arsenal will offer something to Lyon for Aouar, and I think this one could happen. For Memphis, it's a bit different. Because
tell me about Aouar just a second, right? Because we've seen, and where he'd fit at Arsenal, because we've seen sort of this version that they played of 3-4-3. Obviously, in the opener, it was Xhaka and Elneny.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's going to be Xhaka and Ceballos, right, as kind of a base formation. Does it mean that they're going to go with three central midfielders or maybe not play a back three?
Yeah, I think the idea is to move to a 4-3-3 anyway at some point.
So Tierney moves back to left back, so we don't have to see.
Yeah. For example,
For Kolasinac, right?
And then you could play three in midfield and have Aouar there. But Aouar can play in a 3-4-3 in the two in midfield.
In the two, yeah.
He runs a lot.
He's got the back and forth to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe
more so than Ceballos, although he doesn't have the defensive, you know, minding approach that a proper number six would have. But I think he can play there. So this is a very interesting one for Memphis. Barca have to sell first before they buy anyway. That also goes for Wijnaldum, that goes for Serginho Dest, that goes for all the other players that they are keen on.
Sell or give away for free, by the way,
someone needs to get out of the door. So I think they will make an offer again to Lyon for Memphis once they've been able to maybe, you know, sell or let Vidal go or get some money for a player there and there. But unless,
and they still have the mighty Musa, so they don't really need... They don't really need Depay anyway. It's not a tragedy. You'd rather have some money for Depay for Lyon, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely. And because Depay has only 1 year left on his contract, and I think they would want to make some money of him. Gab, FIFA are giving away $1.5 billion in grants and loans to help football survive around the world after this pandemic. What will be the money used for?
So the idea behind this is that obviously, you know, football's been hit hard all over the world. Obviously, we focus on the Premier League and the top leagues, but, you know, football has stopped everywhere. So even in really tiny leagues, tiny countries elsewhere, even though the amount of money that they lost might have been a lot less, it still has a tremendous impact. I don't quite know about some of these. I mean, we had the opportunity to speak to Ollie Wren, who's the guy who's in charge of essentially leading the committee that's going to give out this money. He said that the world football moves about $45 billion a year and that they made losses of $14 billion. These are US dollar figures. Yeah. It sounds like those figures are, I don't know, they don't quite sound right to me, because the European Clubs Association, for example, said put the losses in Europe alone at $4 billion over 2 years. I don't see how the rest of the world can generate that much money, but whatever. But, you know, they're giving this so that, you know, in some leagues they've given out this money so that players can take COVID tests and start playing again, which obviously is very important because then it generates money. In other leagues, like in Thailand, I think a little more questionable. Like the money was then used to, so that they could pay for VAR in the Thai league, which I don't know. Maybe could have been better.
It's not
the
priority, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just my view. It's case by case. It's a combination of grants and loans. FIFA are sitting on a big pile of money, and they say, I think rightly, look, we need this. We run world football, right? We're the advocates of world football. Let's give this money back to where it's needed, and let's keep the show going. Crucial part is, and they spend a lot of time reassuring us, is that this money is audited and used properly wherever it goes. Because obviously, historically, in the previous FIFA administrations, when they started giving out money, that's when people got in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, I know you love your jerseys and your social media. I have here a list of the most Instagrammed club kits out there. It's from a company called Compare.bet, which might be totally, might be a dude in his basement for all you know, might be unreliable. But hey, we got a list, and this is fun.
Yeah.
So I need you to guess the top three.
Okay, is there one a bit outside the box, like, I don't know, Pescara or something where the jersey of the kids is really cool?
No. These are all big
quotes. Okay, Real Madrid?
Maybe not the ones you'd expect. No, Real Madrid are in fourth place, actually.
Okay, I would go, okay, maybe Arsenal. Like,
Arsenal, you know, are second. That's surprised me.
Yeah, but some of the shirts are
quite... What, is that because of the funny Germanic lettering on the back?
No, it's stylish. So right. The idea is that you can wear your football shirt in the street, not just to go to a football match. So okay, that would fit Instagram. Yeah. So is it the rest of the top clubs?
The other two in the top three are big clubs.
Okay, like PSG?
I knew that was coming. No, PSG are ninth.
Oh, what? Okay, go on then.
So it's in third place, it's Liverpool. Okay. Not that surprising, right? Yeah. And in first place, it's Juventus by huge margin.
It's because you publish a lot of photos of you with Juventus shirt on your Instagram account.
No, I think Cristiano Ronaldo does that.
Okay,
fair enough. He's got a huge social media following.
Sure.
But it is a little interesting here. There's actually three Serie A clubs in the top 10. Milan are 8th, Inter are 10th. Bayern Munich, not very Instagrammable. They're 13th. I would have thought they'd be a little bit higher.
Yeah. Well, and finally, Gab, Diego Simeone is in quarantine after testing positive for the virus. Do you feel worse for him or actually for the virus?
Okay, now this is going to come with a caveat. That is the joke that everybody's been making in Spain. Hey, it's Diego Simeone, the guy's El Cholo, the guy's the bionic man.
The virus is in trouble.
The virus attacks him. He's going to stomp all over it and destroy it. Now, it's funny. We make love of it. Obviously, this is a very serious...
Yeah, it is.
But a very serious illness which has caused a lot of damage. But, you know, it's a blow for Atletico Madrid. But best wishes to Diego Simeone, who, you know, I've had the pleasure and privilege of spending time with, of going to lunch with him. He is, I think, might not like his football, but he is one of the good guys. You know what he told me once?
No.
Wise advice to all young players. When you're at home in your room, when you're flipping through the channels on your television, if you see green, stop. If it's football match, watch it. If it's golf, move on. Because golf is a complete waste of time, and nobody under the age of 50 should ever be worrying about playing golf. Yeah, Diego Simeone, not a golf fan.
Yeah, clearly not a golf fan. But
we would have been shocked.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jules, this brings us to an end. Shout out to Benfica, who will be watching the Champions League on television this year.
Or maybe golf. Maybe golf.
Or maybe golf. Maybe golf. Yes.
Who knows?
Maybe golf.
Maybe.
We all we got. We all we need. Catch you on Monday.